Mahomes keeping his feet moving, holding it. Now fires for the end zone. Late caught! Touchdown! Kansas City, Justin Watson. As Mahomes, that patented just parallel run to the line of scrimmage, and then unleashes a strike, and getting open in the red zone, Justin Watson, and the Chiefs have the first touchdown of the game.
Chiefs pretty impressive on Saturday night in Arizona, take on the Cardinals, who may be one of the worst teams in football. So I don't want to get too overly excited about how impressive the Chiefs were. The Chiefs started out slow offensively, but then got that touchdown drive. Mahomes to Justin Watson. First two drives ended in punts. And Shane Buechele looked very good. Blaine Gabbert looked good. Buechele was the first guy to come in after Mahomes, not Gabbert. So that created automatic backup quarterback controversy for many people on social media. And they both played well. All four Chiefs quarterbacks played well. They combined to go 31 for 38 for 393 and three scores. Gabbert touchdown passes to Amir Smith-Marset and Cornell Powell put the Chiefs up 31 to 10. Buechele had a 15-yard scamper for a touchdown. Chiefs 1-1 in the preseason. They'll host the Browns on Saturday at noon, which you can hear on Z96.3 of the Lake. Andy Reid on the positives of the game.
Knocking the rust off for the ones, I think, is important. A little communication continuity there, I guess, would be the word that you say. Just bringing things together and working off of each other. I take that for the ones. And then the rest of the guys are trying to make the team. And you're trying to show and where they can fit. And our message from the beginning is just make it hard for Veach and myself to make those decisions. And, you know, they did that tonight. So that's a positive.
You know, a lot of positives come out of this game, and I try to catch myself a little bit because of who they're playing. I mean, I'll start with this. The Chiefs didn't sack a quarterback the whole game, and Arizona's not that good.
Mm-hmm.
So they had chances to. They just couldn't wrap up Clayton Tune, among other quarterbacks. But the things that stood out to me, and you can add what stood out to you, Rashee Rice looked really good. 8 catches, 96 yards, played with the ones. He did have a drop to start the night, but came back fine. Amir Smith-Marset, 4 catches, 92 yards, and a touchdown. Had another big gainer called back due to penalty. Shane Buechele looked outstanding. 10 for 10, 105 yards and a touchdown. Blaine Gabbert, 7 of 8, 120 yards, 2 touchdowns. Mahomes was the worst quarterback rating of the night for all the quarterbacks, so bench him. 10 of 15 for 105 and a touchdown. I think the thing that stood out the most to me, and really I've been paying attention to it, the first week was hard to tell because the first stringers only really played a series, at least Mahomes did. But the offensive line, people have been wondering about the tackles. And I have not worried much at all about Juwan Taylor, right tackle, because that's where he played at Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. My question was left tackle with Donovan Smith, because he did get a lot of holding penalties at Tampa Bay. When they won the Super Bowl, he played very well. Last year, he didn't play as well. But this is a guy that is already fitting in. He brought in local food trucks for training camp, mm-hmm. and all the players appreciated that on his own dime. And he's looked good early, although, once again, have they faced a great pass rusher like Joey Bosa or Nick Bosa or Khalil Mack or Max Crosby? No, they haven't seen those type of guys yet. So I would say there's reason to be cautiously optimistic that the offensive line of the Chiefs is going to be just fine. Juwan Taylor looks really good at right tackle, in my opinion. Could this be the best line to protect Mahomes since he's been the starting quarterback? And I say you got to be careful because Mitchell Schwartz was all pro at right tackle. Eric Fisher will end up being pro bowler at left tackle. That was a pretty good line, although I think the interior of this line is better. Creed Humphrey's better than Austin Ryder. Yeah. They're better at right guard and left guard with Trey Smith and Joe Tooney. I think you could make a strong argument that the Chiefs' offensive line, this could be the best one they've had since Mahomes has been the starting quarterback. I think you could make that case.
Since Will Shields, Willie Rowe. Yeah. Casey Wegman, I mean, you could
well
make
before
that
Mahomes
case, too,
there,
right?
Yeah.
Like, you could make it a case that they're as good as that group, right?
Well, and I won't go that far.
Not yet. What I'm saying is when they get to that point, because these guys are young, right, that we're talking about with Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith,
right.
And then Juwan Taylor's still young, too. Yeah. They could be, I didn't mean to say as good. I meant they could be as good as that group if they continue on the right progression here
right.
and what they can do. That group was insane. I mean, the amount of starts they had in in a row was insane, right? And,
yeah.
and what they did to protect that offense, and obviously that was more of a, you know, a run-based offensive line that was going to do a lot and move guys for you and didn't have to pass protect as much as this group mm-hmm. does, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a different style of offensive line for sure, too. And so, but when you think about, like, across the board, there's been some really good mm-hmm. offensive linemen that have played here. Obviously, you talk about Eric Fisher and Schwartz. Just, I mean, he was another one of those guys that had the long streak of starts, right? That mm-hmm. just played all the time until he hurt his back, right? And so there's a lot there. But yeah, on the outside edges, they were good. But on the inside, you know, you're piecemealing it together sometimes with Andrew Wiley and Austin Ryder, and they try to get the other guy from. His name was Austin, too, I think, from the Rams or something, and he didn't ever really fit in, right? And so, they had guys that could do a lot of different things, but as far as, like, a collective, mm-hmm. this seems to be, I mean, if they stay healthy and play the way they can, mm-hmm. I can't think of any collective group that's been better with Mahomes.
Well, the Chiefs said Casey Wiggum at center. They had Brian Waters, Will Shields at guards.
Waters, yeah.
And you had Willie Rofe at left tackle and John Tate at right tackle. Then he went to the Bears, and then they had to replace that right tackle. But they kept those four together for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, two of them are Hall of Famers, and Will Shields and Willie Rofe. Brian Waters was really, really good,
yes.
and Casey Wiggum was underrated. So they, and that was for Trent Green, who was a pocket passer, so they had to protect the passer more because they didn't have a guy like Mahomes running around that would prevent sacks from happening. So statistically...
Bigger guys, too, right? Like,
right.
they weren't as athletic as this group of offensive linemen, too, because that's just what they had to be back then, right? Like, so
yeah.
That's how you were set up, right?
I don't know about that, man. I mean, Will Shields was one of the most athletic
I'm not
guards.
Saying he wasn't athletic, but he was definitely bigger.
Yeah,
that line was bigger. There's no question about that.
Well,
it's just the way they were set up.
We can look it up, but the point, I don't care if they're big or not. They were athletic. I mean, they were pulling for Priest Holmes 15 yards down the field. I don't know how many times I see Priest Holmes get not even touched 10 yards down the field. You got to be athletic to go out and pull.
Well, I'm
like
not
Ryan
saying
Waters.
You don't, but this group's way more athletic than that group, I think. Look at Creed Humphrey running down the field, just blocking upfield and doing stuff like he does.
You might want to go back and watch.
No,
Will Shields
I get what
you.
I get what
Brian
you're
Waters
saying.
Was known. Brian Waters. I see, I
get
think
what
you're showing
saying.
Your youth.
No,
here a
I get what you're saying.
Brian
no,
Waters
I watched. I'm not showing my youth. I'm 40 years old. I watched that team play.
I think you're showing that you're younger than me because you're not remembering it quite as well. Brian Waters was one of the most underrated guards in football, and one of the things they talked about with the Chiefs was they were always downfield blocking. If you're not athletic. You aren't down the field 15 yards.
And I didn't say
secondary.
They weren't athletic.
I mean, I think
this group's more athletic than that group.
I promise. You okay? So you think that the Chiefs? You think Joe Tooney is more athletic than Will Shields?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, probably.
Wow, I disagree. But okay.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying, as a group, this group's way more athletic. I mean, these guys are moving and can move, and I'm not saying that group couldn't move. What I'm saying is to play the position this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be more athletic.
You have to be athletic. I don't know. It depends.
I think to play with the offense you've got to be more athletic.
I think it depends. I think it depends. I mean, you don't have to be as good as an offensive lineman with Mahomes as your quarterback. You had to be better with Trent Green because Trent Green couldn't get out of the pocket.
I
would argue that the Chiefs offensive line with the two Hall of Famers and arguably should have been a third had a tougher job to protect a guy was a sitting statue, whereas Mahomes is able to make the offensive line look good. And at the end of the year, they say, well, Mahomes only got sacked 18 times. Yeah, because he ran for his life and got and avoided another 25.
Yeah. And
look at the offensive line where they won the Super Bowl. Look at the offensive line they had that got to the Super Bowl and got beat up by the Buccaneers. That game is amazing, the plays he made then. If that's Trent Green behind any if Trent Green is playing quarterback for the Chiefs when they won their Super Bowl, that offense, first of all, they don't win the Super Bowl because Trent Green isn't going to get out of the pocket. Steve Wisniewski, guy you pulled off the street, Steve Wisniewski, was a starting guard. I wouldn't say, are you going to say that he's more athletic than what the Chiefs had? Well, but that was just a couple years ago. You said that they got to be more athletic
now than they showed that they weren't, right?
But they won a Super Bowl with Steve Wisniewski at guard. They won a Super Bowl pulling a guy off the street. So you're telling me right now that Steve Wisniewski wasn't as athletic as a Will Shields or a Brian Waters, but you just told me in the modern game and the Chiefs style offense, they've got to have more athleticism on the line. And I just told you Steve Wisniewski, you admitted, isn't. And they won a Super Bowl with him.
Suffered with him the next year.
But they won a Super Bowl with him.
Yeah.
So you're saying Wisniewski wasn't that athletic compared to what the Chiefs had. So
I don't
kind of contradicts
you know, I,
what you said.
I got to go watch Will Shields and Brian Waters again, but I'm very, very, very confident that the five guys that are starting on this year's offensive line are more athletic than the five guys that were starting when Trent Green was playing. And I'm not saying they're better either.
I'm not necessarily going to disagree with you collectively as a five because of this year's group, because Jawan Taylor
is very
athletic.
This is the group we're talking about.
Right.
That's why I brought it up.
Right, but if you're sitting here and telling me Joe Tooney is more athletic than Will Shields, I'm going to sit here and go, I don't know.
I'd have to watch him, one-on-one and see what they're doing, how they're pulling.
Trey Smith is very athletic and big. Brian Waters was an outstanding athlete. I think Brian Waters is getting the shaft again like he did his whole career. It's like always overlooked because, well, we had Willie Rofe and we had Will Shields, so we can't put everybody on offensive line as a Pro Bowler. Brian Waters was one of the most underrated guards in probably football history.
No doubt about it.
And he was super athletic. So, I think this is the thing I don't like about comparing generations. You're the one that brought up the comparison. That's why I don't like it.
Because
it's not fair. It's not fair at all. Because Trent Green and Patrick Mahomes are two completely different quarterbacks. And there's no doubt Mahomes is a more athletic quarterback than Trent Green. And Dick Vermeil is a whole different coach than Andy Reid. And the Kansas City Chiefs threw the ball more than you think back then, and still Trent Green was kept up for the entire season because of that line could protect him, but he didn't scramble very often. And by the way, they did not have the weapons that the Kansas City Chiefs have today.
No,
they didn't have. I mean, Tony Gonzalez, they had obviously a weapon, but Eddie Kittison, and there was no Tyreek Hill during that span.
No,
they had Priest Holmes. You could argue, obviously, a better running back. Some people could argue because you had such a great line is why you could plug in Larry Johnson, Priest Holmes, whoever it might be. Jamal Charles, of course, was an outstanding running back as well. But Trent Green didn't have the athleticism at wide receiver and tight end per se, although Tony Gonzalez was outstanding. I'd have to go back and check when Gonzalez left
he
and went
changed
to the Falcons.
It, but he didn't do what Kelsey does. He changed the game.
Right.
At the position, I think.
Right. He's a Hall of Famer, so I'm not even going to compare Kelsey to Gonzalez. I'm not going down that road because they're both Hall of Famers.
But it's kind of different what they do.
Sure.
Right?
Which every
that's what era, we're talking
ever,
about
every era
with
is different.
Here.
Every era is different. It's always going to be that way. But I think this is why I'm getting a little riled up here.
No, and I'm not ever going to say this group's better than that group.
Right.
I'm not going to do that.
But this is the thing that we fall prey to. We fall prey to is when we get caught up in the current moment and we say, that's the best game I've ever seen.
Sure.
That's the best tennis match that's ever been played. We don't even stop to think about it. This is the best offensive line ever. We've played two preseason games. I mean, dear Lord. And when you say, and you didn't say that, okay, but that's what some people are saying, is that the Chiefs, this could be the best offensive line they've had. I haven't heard anybody until you said it say that this offensive line could be better than that offensive line that the Chiefs
said. I don't think they'll be better.
Okay.
I said they could be as good.
As good. Well, when you say good, two-fifths of that line was Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
So when you say that, I haven't seen anybody else say that. Like, I've seen people all over the place say that this may be the best offensive line the Chiefs have had with Mahomes. But you've taken it one step further to where you've gotten my attention by saying you think
it
can be.
And I'm sure I got other people's attention too by saying that.
Right. And I'm not saying you're wrong or right because we will find out. But we do get caught up, and I'm guilty of it too. We get caught up in, well, this group's better than that group 15 years ago, but we don't remember how good that group was. You can sit here and say, I watched them growing up. Yeah, but when was the last time you watched the tape? When was the last time you watched Willie Rofe and Will Shields play for the Kansas City Chiefs? It was a long time ago. So it's not recent. It's not in your mind. But you just watched the offensive line not even let Mahomes get touched for two games. In preseason, where there are no major pass rushers rushing the quarterback, so, yes, there is potential for the... Listen, the Chiefs don't need this offensive line to be as good as Willie Rofe, Will Shields, and Casey Wegman and Brian Waters. They don't need it to be that good.
Especially not in the same way.
No, they don't. That's the thing. They don't... I don't even need them to be that great. Because, I mean, if they are, well, then you might as well hand them the Lombardi now. But if they're somewhere in the conversation, as you're saying, well, then, yeah, the Chiefs have a great chance to win the Super Bowl. And the Chiefs proved that they can pull a guy off the street and win a Super Bowl. They've also proven that they have a quarterback that can take him to the Super Bowl and then play with two backup tackles and still throw passes off a guy's helmets that can't be caught for touchdowns in a Super Bowl. He can play on one leg and still get around when he's pressured last year in the Super Bowl. So Mahomes is obviously an X factor that makes your offensive line better than it is. And I think we got to be careful about that. Mahomes makes his line look better than it is. Now, there are times where he does scramble, where he'll get a little pressure, and some people will say, well, Orlando Brown caught a lot of heat for this. Orlando Brown came from a run-oriented offense in Baltimore, playing right tackle to left tackle, and normally a quarterback takes a 5 or 7 step drop. Sometimes Mahomes will go all the way back 10, 12 steps. He'll retreat back. And then the guy goes by Orlando Brown and he sacks Mahomes or pressures him, and people say Orlando Brown wasn't very good at protecting Mahomes. Well, first of all, as offensive linemen, especially tackles, you're not taught to worry about the guy 12 steps behind. In fact, you're taught to go ahead and let him go that far behind, because that's going to allow my quarterback to step up in a pocket and deliver a pass. And that would be Trent Green. Trent Green was easier to block for in certain ways because of that. So you can argue that's why the offensive line now has to be more athletic, is because Mahomes, he runs around and you got to block maybe a little bit longer, or you got to actually block to where he doesn't get to the quarterback 12 steps behind the line of scrimmage compared to Trent Green. So you could argue that that could make this line or is more athletic. You also can argue that Mahomes makes the offensive line better, because at the end of the year, statistically, who's one of the most least sacked teams in the NFL every year with Mahomes? It's the Chiefs. Yeah, I don't care who the hell who's the left tackle or right tackle. It don't matter. Yeah. Mahomes evades pass rushers as good as anybody. And at the end of the year, like, well, you know, that Chiefs offensive line is, you know, people talk about how Mahomes gets pressured and he has to be flushed out of the pocket. But really, honestly, you know, he took a few hits, but you know what? The stats do not back up your argument. The offensive line's not that bad. The stats say that he's only been sacked 23 times. Well, that's because the guy is amazing and can do a Houdini-type acts out of the pocket and still make a play downfield or scramble and get yards. All you got to do is go back to the playoff game against the Titans AFC title game when he was dead for rights. Offensive line did not do a good job on that play.
Yeah.
And then he squirts free, comes to the sideline, and everybody thinks he's going out of bounds, and then he cuts back, stays in bounds, and scores a touchdown before halftime. Trent Green could have never done that. Of course, a lot of quarterbacks couldn't do that. So that's why I don't like comparing eras. But I will say this, to end this part of the conversation. I will say that you definitely got my attention on your birthday, so well done. Second of all, and I thought the heat might have gotten to you when you initially said the comment, but what you're saying is they could be as good. You didn't say that they're going to be better.
No, and
if you
not
said
close
better,
right
then
now.
I would have lost my mind. But when you say that, that means that the offensive line has a lot of potential. It also means this offensive line, Joe Tooney's the old, him and Donovan Smith, I don't know what, they've got to be around. I know Tooney's 29 or 30. I don't know if Donovan Smith, how old he is. They're probably about the similar age. Obviously, Creed Humphrey's young. Obviously, Trey Smith's young, which is a steal in the sixth round. And then, clearly, Jawan Taylor is young, and they got him, and he signed for a while. So the Chiefs have set themselves up really well to have a younger offensive line. And if Joe Tooney gets long in the tooth, they'll find a way to replace him. It won't be the end of the world. And if Donovan Smith, you know, leaves after 1 year and plays really well, they'll find somebody else to plug in there, or they'll move Jawan Taylor to left tackle. The Chiefs are set, and that's why we lead into the Chris Jones thing. How do they, what kind of contract? Because this affects everybody. If you sign Chris Jones to this big time deal and it hurts you or it ties you up a little bit cap wise, then you have less money to re sign Nick Bolton. You have less money to re sign Legarius Sneed, which I don't think they're going to re sign him anyway. But what happens if you want to give Kelsey more money? What happens if you need to go get a left tackle? Because Donovan Smith went and got a bigger deal somewhere else because he has a monster year this year protecting Patrick Mahomes. You got to have some financial flexibility. And I still think that's what's holding up the whole Chris Jones thing, is the Chiefs know they're going to get it done. Chris Jones knows they're going to get it done. But the Chiefs got to get the numbers right. And you would think here very soon they're going to get this figured out, and that Chris Jones will be with the Chiefs here very, very soon. But let's go back. I mentioned the guys that stood out. We mentioned the offensive line looked great. Was there anybody else that stood out to you in this game on Saturday that you're like, oh, wow, that guy, maybe he'll make the team, maybe he won't make the team, but he might make another team?
Yeah, I mean, I I'd never even been paying attention to this 82. I already forgot his name now. The receiver, Smith Marset. Like,
yeah,
who's this guy? Mm-hmm. Like, I've not been hearing much about him, right? And then all of a sudden, this he went off and showed speed, ability to catch the football, obviously. You know, you're guarded on that because he's not playing with the ones, right? Like, he wasn't, like, right away standing out, but as the game went on, he was there. So, you know, everybody's worried about that wide receiver position, and then this guy shows up, and it's like, oh. But again, it's preseason. I don't even know if he's going to make the team. Like, his name's not in the conversations that anybody's had,
right,
to make the team as a wide receiver. Now, obviously, he's doing some special team stuff, too, and things like that. So it'll be interesting to see that. I don't know. I had to record it because we went out to eat on Saturday night, and I didn't watch any of the game live, and so I was kind of skimming through some of it yesterday in the second half. But I wouldn't say there was anything that just overly shocked me, or just what the Chiefs once can do and normally do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some of the things you see, there's still some learning to do and at this level and things like that. And I would say there was some learning to do. And there's one play where I'm seeing, you know, I'm watching Felix sometimes when he's out there, Andy Dikozama, just to see.
He got a few pressures.
What he can do. He got some pressures. There was one play where he just sold out too hard. Could have had a sack.
Yeah.
And fell for the play action. And I think Tune was in at the time. He just whiffed it. Like, he just sold out too strong,
mm-hmm,
and bit on the play action. So there's times where you're looking at that stuff, but he did that at K-State too. I'm like, I'm not going to lie to you about that.
Oh, sure.
So, and every defensive end that crashes like that, that blitzes like he does, that gets to the quarterback like he did in college and like they're hoping he does at this level, every one of them is going to do it at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not perfect. You're not going to see everything. You're not going to judge everything right. So there's a lot of that. I liked Rashee Rice, like you said, and what they talk about him kind of turning into a running back after he gets up the field and catches the ball, and he does, looking to take on contact sometimes. And that can be a good thing and a bad thing. But, you know, as you watch this kind of game and kind of see where they're at with other guys that are on the – especially wide receivers, you feel more comfortable about that. It's hard to judge the defense, though. You know, we were hard on them, obviously, after the first game.
Right.
But Kyler Murray didn't play in this game.
No.
Like, they didn't have a quarterback that's really gonna, mm-hmm, really gonna cause problems with mobility, right? And they still, yeah, exactly. And they still didn't get a sack. And so that, you know, I think a lot of people would say, hey, the defense only allowed 10 points, good performance. But at the same time, it's like, you can't sack these guys. Like, what are we gonna do? Like, can we get to Jalen Hurts? Can he get to even Joe Burrow? Right, Josh Allen? Like, can we get to those dudes or not? That's going to be a huge question mark going into the season, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
That, because they're going to need to.
Right.
That's what it's all about. You got to pressure the quarterback. And if you don't, the quarterbacks this day and age are going to make you pay for it.
Well, and Spags brought lots of blitzes, and they still couldn't bring him down. And that was Clayton Tune. Now imagine what happens when you're dealing with Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. Yeah, we know. Those are all way better than Clayton Tune.
Yes.
And Colt McCoy. So that's why I can't get overly excited about what they did the other night. There's a lot of positives I take out of it. The defense is still a concern for me, clearly, without Chris Jones. I mean, Karlaftis is not getting, and I mean, nobody got a sack. Nobody. Karlaftis didn't. I forgot his name. He's from the Niners. He's suspended for 6 games, so he ain't gonna be there for 6 games.
Yeah, exactly.
Mike Dana hasn't even played yet, as far as I remember, so he's banged up, and Snead hasn't played yet either in the preseason. So, Chamari Connor, a 4th-round draft pick out of VTech, he looks like a good pickup. I mean, I like some of what he's doing. I noticed Jalen Watson, mm-hmm, was on second-team defense, and he started a lot last year. So the Chiefs have some depth in the secondary. But, you know, to me, the offensive line looked really good. That makes me feel good. Every quarterback had plenty of time to throw, but it was against the Cardinals, who may have one of the worst rosters in the National Football League. And, of course, what about backup quarterback? We'll be remiss if we didn't talk about that. Listen, I said last week that I think Shane Bouchel can push Gabbert for the backup spot, and he hasn't done anything to disappoint me.
Oh, no, not from that aspect.
But I do think that it's still going to be Blaine Gabbert. They didn't bring him in and pay him the money they did. It'd be a $1.1 million hit to the cap if they cut him. Because are you going to carry 3 quarterbacks? I doubt. I mean, you might have one. Well, first of all, Gabbert ain't going to be on the practice squad. So he's either going to be active backup, and Bouchel's on a practice squad, but if Bouchel has a chance to go somewhere else and play, which he's looked pretty good in the preseason, then there's no reason for him to stick with the Chiefs to be on the practice squad when he's the third banana. So Bouchel might be playing himself into a backup job somewhere else. And, you know, there's a guy named Eric Bieniemy, who's the offensive coordinator at Washington. I don't know who the Commander's backup quarterback is, but Sam Howell is, I think, going to be their starter. He's young. Shane Bouchel would probably be a good fit going to the Commanders, knowing terminology and working with Bieniemy. I mean, that's somebody mentioned that one. The Bears, Ryan Poles knows Bouchel a little bit from his time with the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. Maybe he would be a backup, maybe to Justin Fields. I don't know who the Bears' current backup is, so I don't know if he would be a backup for sure or not. But those would be connections that know a little bit about Bouchel. Or it could be somebody we're not even thinking about going, wow, we need a backup quarterback. And that Bouchel kid, you know, Reed can develop quarterbacks. Let's go get him. And the Chiefs might be sitting there going, man, we like to hold on to this guy. And they were able to last year. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they're going to be able to this year. I could be wrong. So if they really want him to stay, then they're probably going to have to make him their backup quarterback. Because I don't think they can stick him on the practice squad again this year and get away with it. But I may be wrong.
Yeah, Jacoby Brissett's at Washington. So,
so he probably wouldn't
get
that.
I don't know if you take a chance on a younger guy or keep the veteran, kind of like a similar situation that the Chiefs are in, right?
That would be similar.
Nathan Peterman's the Bears' backup.
Oh, dear God, then there it is. Nathan Peterman's horrible.
He could obviously go play.
Shane Bouchel should go to the Bears.
There's two other guys that are on the Bears' roster, but I've not heard of them, so I don't know what they
do. Bouchel go to the Bears would be a best bet then, because Nathan Peterman, all he does is throw interceptions.
Yeah.
Every time I see him play, he throws interceptions.
Yeah. So, there's some stuff there. I like Blaine Gabbert a lot more on Saturday than I did the first game. I can tell you that. And there's one, that deep throw he had, he dropped that in a bucket and put it right on the money. Mm-hmm. And so when you can make throws like that, we didn't see Shane Bouchel do that, right? Like, we saw him run. We saw his elusiveness. We saw that he's got that skill both weeks, right?
Right.
That he's got quickness. I think he's toned down since college, right? And just got a better body to play right now, right? And I think that you see that from him, and it makes it very intriguing to have him as a backup quarterback. But you can see Blaine Gabbert make that throw to Smith-Marset in stride, just a deep bomb, right? Putting it up and dropping it right in a bucket. And it's like, oh, dude, the dude still has an arm and can make throws.
Right.
And you know, sometimes Patrick Mahomes can't make those type of throws, right? Because some of his deep balls are not always necessarily on target, right? And so it's kind of crazy to think that, but I love Shane Bouchel. I love having a guy that can do what he does, but there's just – you just can't replace a starting experience and guys that have been there before, in my mind, right? Like, so, you know, if I'm leaning, even especially after Saturday, I'm still leaning toward Gabbert to be the backup because of the experience.
Yeah, I think it's probably...
And the money that they're paying him, obviously.
Well, right. I think it's going to be Gabbert still. And he played well, by the way. And he played with more... Some of the starters in week one, he played with more of the third stringers in week two, and he still had success. So, and he looked better. And as you talked about last week, the longer he's in the system, the better he'll probably play. And that's what happens to Andy Reid and quarterbacks he has. They get better. It's the bottom line. I can't think of a quarterback that's gotten worse under Andy Reid and probably his whole coaching career, to be quite honest with you. So there were some good things with the Chiefs. I think the biggest thing is there are going to be some good wide receivers that the Chiefs can't keep. I mean, they've got a few here that I think the Chiefs have their seven already. I think they're going to carry seven, and they got their seven. So, and let's see if I get them all. All right, help me out here.
All right,
Tony
all right.
has. And by the way, I've had people text me going. I've had people text me going, man, the Chiefs wide receiving core, that looks good. They're better than I thought they were going to be. I'm like, I've been trying to tell you this for 3 weeks. If you listen to the show,
I've been telling people this since way back when.
Oh, yeah.
When they were trying to get Hopkins, I'm like, they're fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop,
you don't need Hopkins.
Stop going crazy.
So your number one wide receiver is going to be Tony if he's healthy.
Yeah.
And then your number two is going to be MVS or Sky Moore. Intertwine 2-3.
Yeah.
Those are your top three receivers. Then right now, it looks like Rashee Rice is your fourth one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then you've got Richie James would be probably next, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's hard for me to believe he's not going to make it.
He's going to make it. He's going to make it. He's a punt returner, too. So he's going to make it. He's played well. He's going to make it. And then Justin Ross is going to make it. And Rashee Rice. Did I say Rice
yet? Yeah, you said Rice. Who Watson's got to be the
other Watson. One. Yeah, Justin Watson is seventh. Some people said that you could maybe get away with not having Watson and have somebody else, but there's a comfortability between Mahomes and Justin Watson.
They took the initiative that they wanted to re-sign him in the offseason, too, and they did that on purpose.
And he could have got more money elsewhere, and Mahomes is comfortable with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brady always had a guy that maybe made the team. You're like, but Brady always was comfortable with him.
Yeah. So, I'm very confident Justin Watson will be on this
and
team.
So the question is, who is on the team that should get it instead of Justin Watson? Was there somebody else that should make the team?
No, I mean, based on everything that you put together, he's the one that caught the first team touchdown, when they were out there and scored at the end of the quarter. Like, he's going to be out there.
Right.
You know, I think there's more leeway of who you might want to keep on as another tight end with Jody Fortson out right now.
Yeah, Bushman might be like,
so Bushman might be that guy, and then so you got Kelsey, Bushman, Gray, and Bell. I still don't think Bushman's going to make the team because of Bell, right?
I was going to say, if you want to keep seven wide receivers, how are you going to keep four tight ends?
You're keeping three tight ends. You're keeping Kelsey, Gray, and Bell.
But Bushman, maybe he could be on practice squad.
And that's what happened last year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he had a good preseason, ended up on practice squad.
When he broke his collarbone.
Yeah, and I think he would have been on the practice squad had he not broke his collarbone, but you feel like there's better chances there because Fortson's hurt, but in the end, really, there's not. Blake Bell isn't bringing the same things to the table, obviously, as I even know a Gray of what he can do in the offense, but
right.
I find it hard to believe they're not going to keep him on the roster for some reason.
No, I think Blake Bell will be on
the team. Might just be for quarterback sneaks.
Yeah. Oh, please stop.
Fix him.
Stop it.
For tight end sneaks.
The Bell dozer who didn't bulldoze his way to a first down in the first game. Yeah, I agree with all that.
But yeah, it's so hard when there's only 53 and
they're not going to cut Justin Ross and they're not going to cut Justin Watson, so they're going to carry seven.
Yeah.
And I think with James being the punt returner allows them to do it.
And I think that's why they're trying Smith Marset on punt returns and things like that. Maybe that's a dude that they can justify keeping an eighth.
Yeah.
If he can return,
cover and cover.
And he can be on the kickoff team or something like that. And so teams do that, man. If you think there's a guy that can be a threat for you at some point, but you don't think there's a fit right now in the offense, keep him around, let Dave Toe work with him, let him do some stuff, and then Tony can't make it the whole season.
That's
somebody
right.
else has got to get into that spot. Right?
Odds are he won't. Yeah.
And he's not doing it.
And Justin Ross is covering kicks. Anybody notice that?
Yeah.
He's covering kicks. Yeah, well, he can't just have a guy be a wide receiver that gets two snaps. He's got to do something else to fulfill your roster, or he shouldn't be active on game day.
Yeah.
So that's where he's got to help out, is cover kicks. Chris Jones' prediction. I said he'll be signed, sealed, and delivered. My prediction a couple weeks ago was by August 22nd. That was what I said. 21st to 22nd, when they go back to Kansas City. Well, today's the 21st, tomorrow's the 22nd. So for my prediction, and you said when they go to Kansas City that he would be signed.
Yeah, today. I said today.
So we're going to find out if we're wrong or right. We'll see if Dusty's right. Dusty's birthday present is Chris Jones getting a lot of money. That's funny. That's funny.
Get him signed so we can stop talking about it.
Yeah.
That's all I want for my birthday. I got enough on Saturday. That's all I need today.
Listen, I've been worried about the Chiefs pass rush for years. Ever since Mahomes become quarterback, I've been worried about this pass rush. And they, at times they get there, and they had the second most sacks of anybody last year, which is still surprising to me. And Chris Jones had a career year. But just because Chris Jones comes back, that doesn't solve the pass rush, because there were times when Chris Jones played and they couldn't get to the quarterback. So I think people forget. I may go, well, Chris Jones solves everything. No, he doesn't. He makes your defensive line better. No question about that. Does he give you a better chance to get pressure on the quarterback? Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that that solves your problems, because I've seen Chris Jones on the field before when the Chiefs have blitzed and still don't get to the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Frank Clark, now George Kolaftis, whoever it might be, Felix or whoever, off the edge that can't bring down the quarterback. They get close, but they can't bring him down. No, you can't bring him down. What's the point? So, and by the way, I'm watching this preseason game tonight, and I'm watching all the quarterbacks avoid pressure. Every quarterback nowadays is got some kind of mobility compared to the old days. Which, if we're going to sit here, and we talked about a little bit ago, you know, that offensive line now is more athletic than offensive line 15 years ago, well, then we got to say the quarterbacks are all more athletic than the quarterbacks 15 years ago. Does that mean that they're better quarterbacks than those quarterbacks 15 years ago? Not necessarily.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because the offensive line of the Chiefs is more athletic than the Chiefs line from 2003 that started 9-0 and went 13-3 under Dick Vermeil, which was, by the way, 20 years ago, not 10 or 15, that doesn't mean that this year's offensive line is better because they're more athletic. But it is so hard to sack the quarterback. It is so hard because, one, you got to hit him in the right way. You can't do something bad. You can't land on him like Chris Jones did. You got to be careful how you put him down on the turf. And they're so mobile. They're able to break some tackles. Quarterbacks are bigger, stronger, more athletic. And then it is harder for teams to sack the quarterback. It really is. So we can sit here and say the Chiefs have a hard time sacking quarterbacks. They're not the only team in the league that has problems bringing down the quarterback.
Yeah. It's all Bernard Pollard's fault, right? Like for
it really is.
For coming below the knees with Tom Brady and ending his season in week
one. The low hit, but that doesn't explain the landing on top.
The rest of
all
it,
the weight, that's
that
all
just
different.
That just added. It did. It continued to add. They continued to add on more and more and more and more and more and what you can't do to the quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Like, and so yeah, landing on top. Some of those are the most absurd things in the world. It's like,
right?
Am I supposed to stop?
Right.
My 290-pound body because I've touched the quarterback while I'm falling down.
It's like, yeah, I'm just
it's
gonna,
like you can't do
I'm just
it,
gonna but, you know somehow
yeah, I mean I
turn
I,
in
I,
the Matrix or something.
You know, there's always been the rough in the passer kind of things, but you know, once I really that probably was a transition point of kind of changing some of the rules was when Pollard went low on Tom Brady,
mm-hmm.
and said you can't hit him below the knees anymore, and then that evolves into now you can't do this one and this one, and it evolves to you can't tap a quarterback on the bottom of his face mask
right.
accidentally.
Yes.
Like you can't even just like yeah. touch his chin anymore, right? Like it's like this is all rough in the passer now. But yeah, it is. It's more difficult because of all the rules, because of how athletic and versatile these quarterbacks are. And again, it's another thing like you look at eras and it's like Peyton Manning wasn't doing these things, but Peyton Manning didn't have to do these things. The game was different when he was playing, right?
Right.
And so everything evolves and sometimes it comes back, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. you go back to in cycles to what used to work and now doesn't, and now something new works again and the old way doesn't work, and mm-hmm. and so that's just life, right? And so you do adjust, but there's a lot of guys that are playing right now that probably are more athletic at the position and maybe can do more at the position, but you don't say they're a better quarterback than them, right? Like you don't say they're a better receiver than them, because there's a lot of things that Mahomes does, and I could say he's the best quarterback of all time, but he doesn't have the wins and everything that Tom Brady has and any, you know, all that stuff that adds up. And so now it's just like everything else. You're comparing apples to oranges, really.
Well, Ryan Clark made a comment. He put it out there, and he, you know, he got in trouble with the Chiefs talking about he was broken, Mahomes was, and so forth. But he owned up to it. Ryan Clark said, "Yeah, okay, I got that wrong." And I appreciate people that admit they're wrong. And Ryan Clark admitted that. But he came out the other day and he said George Pickens is a more talented wide receiver than Justin Jefferson, and people freaked out. And he said, and he and I understood what he meant.
Sure.
But other people freaked out about it, taking it as
Take
he meant
one
that
way.
They're better.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay? And by the way, when you talked earlier about comparing the eras of the offensive lines of the Chiefs, you didn't you said more athletic, but you didn't say better. You said more athletic.
Absolutely.
Right?
I made sure I didn't say better.
Right, exactly. You said more athletic.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Exactly, right. So Ryan Clark, he came back and he said, listen, let me try to clear this up for you. I still believe, and most people believe, that Aaron Rodgers is more talented than Tom Brady. But does that mean I think that Tom Brady isn't the GOAT?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Like, Lamar Jackson is way more talented than Tom Brady. Michael Vick was. Michael Bishop was. Michael Bishop couldn't stay in the league.
Same time frame.
Right.
On the same roster.
Right. I mean, all these guys are way more athletic than Tom Brady. That doesn't mean you're the greatest at all, obviously. So getting back to what you brought up earlier, I pulled up the 2003 Chiefs offensive line. Casey Wigman was the center, all right, and he weighed 285.
I actually did all that earlier.
Okay.
Yeah.
285. He was 30. In 03, the Chiefs started 9-0 with Dick Vermeil's quarterback. Trent Green was quarterback. Priest Holmes ran for 1,400 yards, 27 touchdowns. He had 74 receptions for 700 yards. He was the running back. He was first team all pro. Mm-hmm. Trent Green was a pro bowler. Priest Holmes was a pro bowler. Tony Richardson, who did the dirty work, he was a pro bowler at fullback. Now the Chiefs don't even have a fullback.
Yeah,
that tells you how the game's changed.
You don't use that anymore.
Wide receivers weren't great, but decent. Eddie Kinnison, Johnny Morton. Tony Gonzalez had 900 yards receiving that year. He was 27 in his prime, 10 touchdowns. Willie Rofe was 33 at left tackle. He was a first team all pro along with Gonzalez and also Priest Holmes. Brian Waters at 26 was a left guard at 315 pounds. Casey Wigman, 285, was a a center. Will Shields was 315. He was right guard. And John Tate, I forgot his weight. Let me pull it up here.
He's 6'6", 312.
6'6", 312.
I did all the heights, too, because heights are making a difference on some of the,
right.
the weights of some of these guys right. that are on the roster right now
right.
for the Chiefs.
So do you have the current ones, then?
I do have the current
ones,
yeah.
Okay, so left tackle, Donovan
Smith. Is obviously, he's pulling the, he's bringing the weight up as a collective.
Okay.
But he is 6'6". He's 338. So okay. he's bigger than anybody okay. that has ever played on any either one of these lines.
Okay, gotcha.
But Tooney's 304, 6'5". Shields was 6'3", 315, kind of the same position.
Well, Shields is right guard, so left guard
right,
was
so
Waters.
Right guard would be Trey Smith, 329, 6'5".
Okay.
And
so
Shields
Will,
is 6'3".
Okay. And 315.
Yeah, and Tooney's 305, or 304, 6'5". The Waters was 320, 6'3". And Creed was is 302, 6'4", right?
Yeah.
And Juwan Taylor's only 312 playing right tackle.
Mm-hmm. And that was John
Tate. 6'5", right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's almost the exact same.
Similar.
Right tackle is
yeah.
almost exact same.
Same size, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Donovan Smith, again, is huge,
the
right?
The biggest, yeah.
And I don't, you know, he probably doesn't move as well as Willie Rofe did.
Yeah,
I'm not
going to
say
so.
He did.
No.
And he would.
Yeah.
But I still feel as a collective that this group is more athletic of what
no,
I watch.
No, and I
see.
Listen, I will agree with you that
yeah.
collectively
size
as a
wise,
group.
Size-wise.
My contention was more about a couple of players that we were talking
yeah.
about.
Size-wise, I was going through this, and I was just looking at weights, and I'm like, well, they're very similar. And then I'm thinking, well, these guys don't look as big as those guys because they're taller, too, mm-hmm. and they're more lean.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that Trey Smith is more lean than Brian Waters. Or
Will Shields.
Or than Will Shields.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah,
I
think you're right.
Yeah,
I think
but just like
right.
the body style and shape
right.
and everything that they had to do.
Once again,
back then is different.
Ties into how you
and,
run
and
your
you
offense.
Were built different. Mm-hmm. Like offensive right. linemen were just built different back then.
Yeah,
and
right.
even before that, they were built even
just,
more different.
Just like quarterbacks.
They were 330 pounds. I mean, they're probably averaging like 320 on the line.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they wanted big dudes. And then they figured out, hey, we want big dudes, but we also want dudes that can move.
Right.
And hey, you look at college offensive linemen now, it is insane how small they look, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like Texas Tech, man, when they were running gun, I'd look at those linemen on the field and I'm like, they are not that big. They right. don't have to be big. They got to move. They got to move so they can let Patrick Mahomes move. And you know, Graham Harrell before that. And all those guys, that if you're running that style of offense, you don't want big, bruising offensive linemen that are 320 pounds that can't move.
Right.
And so everything changes, right? And again, I did for sure make sure that I said that this group's not better.
Right.
But they're more athletic.
Yeah. Yes. And you did say that. And once again, you know, the key is to hear Stefan Wisniewski was the one I brought up. And now there's no way you can tell me he was more athletic.
No.
Than Brian Waters or
yeah,
Will
Stefan
Shields.
Yeah, Stefan Wisniewski was, and he wasn't tall either. Really.
No, but I'm trying to pull up his size and everything. There we go. 6'3", and how much did he weigh? 6'3", 305.
I figured so he weighed
he's
more
taller
than
you
to be
think.
With you.
6'3", 305. I'm not saying he's a horrible player. It's just that he, I mean, like I said, they picked him up off the street and he's still able to win with him. But once again, that's where you get in trouble when you compare eras because
yeah.
they are different eras. There are different eras. By the way, the Chiefs defense in 03, if you remember that team, they couldn't stop anybody. And that team had all the firepower in the world that should have went to the Super Bowl or at least made a deep run in the playoffs. They got bounced right off the bat
couldn't
in the divisional round.
Couldn't
get off the field against the Colts in a no punt game. The defense was – they were 9-0 despite their defense. They got turnovers, I remember. That's why they were – the defense did its own. They bent but didn't break horribly. And then when the turnovers dried up, the defense couldn't stop anybody. And then they were – and everybody said that was the problem going to the playoffs. And then the Chiefs would settle for a field goal, and that was like a punt in that game. So – it was an entertaining playoff game, but a very another. You wonder why Chiefs fans enjoy the Mahomes era so much because that was another example of horrible, horrible, horrible feel of a curse with the Chiefs, where they'd be good all year long and then go into the playoffs and lose in weird ways, like not getting the other team to punt.
Yeah.
So for people going, well, Chiefs fans, you know, must be nice. Like if you're real diehard Chiefs fans, we've earned this. We've earned this.
Oh.
Okay. Now if you just jumped on the wagon yesterday, no, you didn't. But we've been through the heartbreak of the horrible.
I mean, as Kansas City sports fans,
oh,
like,
as whole,
I'm just you can't. There was a deal the other day on Twitter. I don't know if you saw my response to it, but the guy's like, "Was there one season where you felt like just you can't be a fan of this team anymore? You just they let you down so much. And can you think of one season?" I was like, "I've been a Royals fan my entire life." Like, and it's like, did you think about just switching
just
teams? And
one.
I'm like, "I've been a Royals fan my whole life, dude. I've not.
Yeah,
I'd have done it multiple seasons if I felt like switching teams.
Absolutely,
Chiefs is the same way, but the Royals is." their lows are very, 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 very low.
Now, the other argument or question, and you could go on forever with this, is because people do this with the NBA all the time. Like, well, would this guy be able to play? Well, oh, Bird couldn't play in this era, you know. Okay, but LeBron could play back in that era. But once again, and John made an interesting point. He texted me and he said the modern offensive line is more athletic. I think as a whole they are. I think there are some exceptions.
And that was the only
I think there's
point
exceptions, like a Wisniewski would be an exception, things like that. But the modern offensive line is more athletic because of advances in nutrition, strength, agility, training.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's a big part of it.
Absolutely. Totally agree with him. Yeah. Totally agree with him. And so just to prove that point, I mean, you see that with the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, the tight ends. I mean, you see this all the time. But the same thing in basketball, too. But here's the thing. When people say, well, Larry Bird wouldn't be as good if he played in today's game. I've heard that from people. Or some of the older players wouldn't be as good and they'd get... They didn't have what the players have today. If those, you don't think Larry Bird would have taken full advantage of full weight training and nutrition and personal masseuses and trainers? That's a guy that had a broken, he had a broken back and played. If there's an NBA player today that had a broken back, you talk about the wussification of America. If there was anybody that had, the NBA player today stubs his toe when he sits out a game, he played with a freaking broken back. Larry Bird did. And you're going to talk about, well, the players today are tougher, stronger, more athletic. I don't know if they're tougher. I don't know if they're tougher. I would argue they're not tougher.
Most of that stuff.
I don't know if I'd say they're tougher.
I would not put that word in.
No, I wouldn't either.
Talk about with today's
athletes. Are they stronger, more athletic? Yes. But if Larry Bird and players back then, or you know, even NFL players in the era, go back to 2003. If Will Shields and Brian Waters was in Andy Reid's offense, would they be worse players? I would bet you they'd still be Pro Bowlers.
Well, and then you can sit there and
Willie Roaf would still be a Pro Bowler.
Yeah, when you say all these things about how the game's changed, it would evolve for them as well, like you said with Larry Bird. And there was something on Twitter the other day. One of the K-State assistant coaches was talking about Larry Bird and how he would have just ate it up in this league because of the way they play, where things are more apt to benefit an offensive player.
Absolutely.
And Larry Bird, I mean, I think it's a perfect example of somebody that would just unbelievably thrive the way he could play
and get
in today's game.
And get in your head.
Yeah, and obviously you got to add all the extras to that because he puts in the same work that everybody else is putting in or more back then, right? Like he was doing the things that were available to him to be elite back then. He'd do the same thing today.
Oh, he absolutely.
You know, if you put the mindset and the wherewithal and just the skill and strength and talent of Will Shields, Brian Waters, Willie Roaf, John Tate, Casey Wegman, today it's astronomical how good Willie Roaf, Will Shields, and Brian Waters could be, right? Like, it'd be insane. Mm-hmm. Like, they'd be getting the contracts that we're talking about with Orlando Brown, Juwan Taylor, whoever it is, right? And so they would have all that to their disposal just like all these guys do. And so I agree with you on that. It's like he's like, you don't think Michael Jordan adjusts to what would happen in this day and age with the same mentality and the same mindset, just doing the same things that they're doing now? And so it's all that stuff is crazy to me to think about. I saw that Larry Bird thing the other day and I'm like, it's crazy when you think about it though, because like he could come into the game and like today, this day and age, average 19 points a game, and it's like,
so what?
We're scoring 125.
Right.
Like the amount of points that are being scored
right
now.
But back then they allowed you to beat the crap out of people.
Yeah, exactly.
So they didn't score as much.
Yeah. And so it's like all that stuff needs to be taken into account when you're talking about all these things. Oh, he's playing against a bunch of plumbers. First of all, no, he wasn't.
No, he wasn't.
And second of all, it's a different day and age for everybody right now. And it's a different aspect and a different training regimen that they're going to get. It's all different.
It's all different.
And just replace Klay Thompson with Larry Bird.
And the players today are making way more money than the players then, and so they have even more money and resources to hire their own personal masseuse, trainer, and everything else. Not to say Bird didn't have money to where maybe he could have done that. Maybe he did. I don't know. But, but don't ever put tough with this year. Don't sit here and say that this generation of players is tougher than the generation when Bird played, and he could go before Bird. I mean, now you're really starting to insult me when you start saying that. You can't say that you're tougher when you sit out games because you're not feeling quite well. I mean, Jordan didn't sit out games. Kobe, by the way, didn't either. And Kobe was more of an old school type of player. Mm-hmm. He really was. Bird didn't. I mean, for crying out loud, Bird had to literally be almost, I mean, he literally had to be completely hurt for him not to play.
It got to the point where he was incapacitated, and that's the only reason that he didn't play.
Yeah, and can you imagine if Bird was in today's game? Like, he would play through pain, and he would play. But the question would be, in today's society, because if he is one of the best players, he would be paid quite a bit.
Yeah.
So then would the organizations allow him to play?
No, they wouldn't.
And they wouldn't allow him to play. That would that would absolutely drive Bird batty. And so, yeah, that's another point, is that if you played today, you might score more points, but you wouldn't play as many points because owners or GMs or coaches would say, load management. Which
well,
is
and then,
sad.
But. Yeah, like you said, there's a lot of different directions you could go with a lot of this stuff. Because like you can say that we can say that they're not tougher, but maybe we don't know. Maybe they are,
and they just aren't allowed to.
Management's like, no, you're not playing tonight.
And they're the ones that pay
owners
your checks.
You're not playing tonight, coach.
They invest so much money in them.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy, I love to see that. Hey, Larry. Larry, you're not playing tonight. Like hell I'm not playing tonight.
I mean,
can you imagine if Jordan or Bird were told that they're not playing because, well, you know what? We got a big game coming up on Friday. We're going to have you rest on a Wednesday. We got an off day tomorrow. And I don't know if those people today in charge could keep Bird and Jordan from playing today if they wanted to. I don't know. It would have been a heck of an argument and a fight.
Yeah.
I don't think the players put up as much of a fight.
No,
but they also have accepted the way
it
is.
Yeah, and they know what it is.
Yeah,
like there's exceptions of probably on both ends.
Yes,
but Kawhi Leonard is obviously the one that comes to my mind right away. An exception that you tell me not to play. Okay, I don't need to play.
I'll sit out.
I'll sit.
Yeah,
and it's really that's a perception, right?
Yes.
I don't know if that's true or not. But that's definitely the perception with Kawhi Leonard.
Right,
the perception with Kobe would have been, okay, you guys can sit, but I'm playing tonight.
That's right. I don't care what you say.
You know, he was on the end of this of when this started. The Spurs started a long time ago, and when it became normal and just the thing to do, Kobe was on the end of that, and I guarantee you, he wasn't going to be doing this load management stuff at the end of his
Kobe
career. I mean, he had to sit
this.
Out because of an injury. He's like, I'm not going
to
do this.
He had to actually be hurt.
I had to do it on purpose. I'm not going to do it voluntarily. No. I'm playing tonight.
Yeah, Kobe, Bird, and Jordan. Those are three guys that. If they played today and they were all alive today and played today in their prime and they were told to sit, not play, I think you'd have a heck of a fight on your hands. And that's what I like to see from the current players. But it's just a different era, different generation, and we got to deal with it.
Well, and I like the conversation that we had here because I think there's too many people that just throw a lot of that to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And they just like, didn't matter back then. These guys are better.
Right.
Well, no, you didn't see it maybe, and there was a different era, different ways of doing things.
Because the easy thing that some people do, younger people in particular now, they see the tape of a Bird playing left-handed a whole game. Well, then they must have played a whole bunch of scrubs.
Yeah, exactly.
The players must have been horrible. No, Bird was that good.
Yeah.
And then you sit there and go, well, yeah, but look at Jordan. He would never be able to hold up. I mean, you know, he's so scrawny. What do you mean hold up? He got the tar beat out of him in the playoffs by the Pistons for how many years, and he somehow survived and didn't miss many games ever. He broke his foot. That was his biggest injury he ever had during his years with the Bulls, and that's what cost him his second year in the league, basically. And then all he did was he could have easily sat out the playoffs. And he there's an example. He fought management to play in the playoffs, and he scored late in the season. He won a key game to get him in the playoffs. And they're like, why bring Jordan back and risk anything? And Jordan's like, I'm playing. I don't care what you say.
Yeah.
I'm playing. Jordan came back, scored like 50 in a game. They won a game that they needed to get in the playoffs in his second year. And then all he did is score 63 against Bird and McHale and Ainge and the Celtics at Boston Garden to win. Larry Bird basically said that he called Jordan almost God, like he'd never seen any player like that before. I mean, that was a great example of the organization wanted Jordan to just shut it down and not even come back that year.
Yeah.
And then they made the playoffs, and they got swept because it was one versus five.
And the Celtics ended up winning the whole
thing.
They
went to double overtime in Boston Garden when he scored 63.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see the current players doing that today. But the younger people automatically look at the old tape, and they see today's tape, and they go, well, everybody's more athletic than the players then, which is true for the most part. And that's how we started this conversation. Uh-huh. So immediately young people say, well, all the players now are way more athletic than the players back then. They would kill those guys. But what they don't factor in is if these guys now didn't have the resources, if they had the same resources Bird and Jordan and those guys had back then versus what Bird and Jordan and Kobe, well, not going to say Kobe, but Bird and Jordan would have now, it flips it. It flips it, and nobody thinks about that. You're absolutely right. You don't think about, well, the advantages that the current players have to get to be more athletic in certain ways. They have better facilities. They have their own personal everything. They got the personal cooks, their personal chefs, personal trainers. They've got everything imaginable. They fly probably better accommodations when they fly and travel. You know how I know that? Because technology, modern day advances, all right? Mm-hmm. It's easy to say. So you sit here and you look at a grainy film of 1987 when Bird does something, whoever it was, and then you look at what LeBron or Kevin Durant or whoever it is now that's hot, or Devin Booker or Luka Doncic, and you say, well, those guys back then couldn't play in today's game. Well, these guys couldn't have played back in that day. Well, I think the greats would have been good no matter when they came in. That's what I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Let's see. And speaking of greats, Spain is the World Cup winner.
Come on in the box and five, go! Spain leads! Carmona! That might be enough. It is! Spain wins the World Cup!
For the first time ever, they beat England 1-0, and Olga Carmona scored the own goal in the 29th minute of the match. She also hit the goal that sent Spain to the final back in the semis, but then she received word after the match her dad had passed away before the final, so her dad didn't get to see her do what she did. Well, maybe he did from above,
yeah.
But what a bittersweet way to, you know, you should be celebrating on top of cloud nine, and then you've got to mourn the fact that you got to put all this together and sort it out in your mind that this should be the greatest moment of my life, and it might be my worst.
Yeah.
All at once.
It's crazy.
That's insane.
When I heard about it, it immediately made me think of Edison Volquez in the World Series,
yeah.
Right? When his dad died, they didn't tell him. He went out and pitched and then told him after the game, right? Mm-hmm. And
the Royals had a tough decision to make, and they debated whether to tell him.
And I don't know if Spain was aware that he had passed away before the match or not. But she was not, because, I mean, they did a press conference after it, and she kind of lifted her shirt up on the goal and showed its shirt underneath it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It had some kind of message on it, and she said it was for one of her best friends that had lost one of her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like then 3 hours later, she found out that her dad passed away before the match even started.
Yeah.
And it's just like she obviously didn't know about it when the press conference was going on.
Right.
And so it's crazy. Like, I was reading that because I was just looking for the information. I didn't have a chance to watch the match, but I was reading all that, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. I mean, what are the emotions like on a day like that? It's just crazy.
I've heard of people that have lost a loved one, and the very next day gave birth to their first child, or vice versa. They had the child, and the person died the next day. You talk about just conflicting emotions, but this is all in one day, and then the pinnacle of your career, and then maybe the worst moment, maybe, off the field for this player. The Royals were in action yesterday and lost again.
And he swings and lines it to center field. And now Isbell is on his way to third, and the tying run is at first base. And the Royals get their first run since the first.
Royals score one in the first. Jordan Lyles gives up two in the bottom of the first. Kyle Isbell misplayed a ball in center that helped them score a run, and that error was costly. Royals down 2-1, didn't score till the ninth. They were down 4-1, scored two in the ninth, made it interesting, but lose 4-3. They are 40-86. They won the first game of the series, lost the last two, so they lose 2 out of 3 at Wrigley. Cubs are right in the middle of the playoff race in the NL Central. They are, I think, 2 or 3 games out of the Central lead, and they have a chance to be a wild card. And the Royals are off to Oakland to play the worst team in baseball. On a normal year, the Royals would be the worst team in baseball, but this year it's the A's. They start a 3-game set, 8-40 tonight in Oakland. Lefty Tucker Davidson, 1-2 ERA, a 6.39, goes for the Royals. I don't know why, but I just saw the word Tucker, the name Tucker, on my piece of paper, and I immediately thought of Tucker from Something About Mary.
Interesting.
I just all of a sudden,
there have been two Tuckers.
The fraud that was Tucker on Something About Mary.
There's two Tuckers that have come to my mind before that.
Really?
One of them's, I think, no longer employed on a news station.
Okay.
But the first one would be, I actually went to school with a guy named Tucker.
Oh, okay.
Tucker Stover out of Colby. Okay. And
I never knew a Tucker.
Yeah.
I knew a mother trucker, but I did not know a Tucker. Royals are 40-86. There's 36 games remaining. Here we go. Ready? Before the year, I said 74-88. I was the most optimistic.
Yeah, I think I had 72.
You did. Yep. And when Jason was here, and he had him at 70, he was the most pessimistic.
Mm-hmm.
So how many wins for the Royals this year? There's 36 to go. How many of these 36 do they win? They would need to go 10-26 to avoid only having 49 wins or less. They would have to go 20-16 to get the 60 wins, which still they would have to go 23-13 to avoid 100 losses.
I'm not doing that. Let's just write that down.
Okay, let's mark
in stone.
Then cross them off. Then
cross them off.
Okay.
I'll say they get to right at 50.
Oh, so you're not even saying they're going to go? They're going to win a third of their games the rest of the way. Here's the thing.
That's kind of what they're doing. Well,
their percentage is lower than a third.
Yeah,
it's like if they win one out of every three games the rest of the way, they're 52.
Do they get 52?
Because if 36, they win a
third.
They would be 52, and what would they be? 52-114. Yeah, that's right. That's by far their worst ever.
Oh yeah,
I think they're going to be hard pressed to get to 52. But the thing is, the Royals do this all the time. You know they're going to get hot
in September.
They're going to get hot in September. They have the most stolen bases since the All-Star break. They're in the top five in about every offensive category in the last 20 games. Of course, Bobby Witt Jr. helps that. But Garcia's hit the ball well, so forth and so on. Of course, their pitching hasn't been super great. But in September, you know they're going to win more than they probably should. So having said that, I will say that they somehow defy the odds. I can't do that. Their pitching's not good. Oh, I can't do that. They're going openers.
That's my thing. Like,
yeah. You said they're going to get the 50 or they won't?
Right at 50.
You're going to say 50-112?
Yeah.
I'll say they go 52. They're going to get the 52. They're going to win a third of their games the rest of the way. They'll be 52. And what is that? 110? Yep.
Yeah.
52-110. And still won't be the worst team in baseball and get the number one draft pick. Son of a gun. Julio Rodriguez, 17 hits in four games. Some of that was against the Royals.
Mm-hmm.
Over his four-game span, he was 17 out of 23 at the plate.
He was 5-for-5 the one game against the Royals.
He was, with the three-run homer to win the game. Yeah. Do you know how many hits the Yankees had in their last four games prior to last night?
You said he had 17?
Uh-huh.
12.
17.
Oh, right at the same.
Yeah. Julio Rodriguez has as many hits.
Doing even worse.
Julio Rodriguez and the Mariners had as many hits in four games as the Yankees had as a team in four games.
Yeah.
By the way, that leads me. If you know, it can kick the Royals when they're down, but they're always down. The Yankees are down, and I'm going to kick them. The Yankees lost their eighth game in a row yesterday. Boo hoo hoo! They fell to the Red Sox 6-5. Sunday's defeat not only represented the second time this season the Yankees have been swept by the Red Sox, it also tied this year's Yankees team with the 1995 club for the longest losing streak the franchise has suffered during the wild card era. The Yankees enter today with a record of 60-64. They have not finished in last place in a division since 1990. The fourth place Red Sox have a 6-game lead over the Yankees with 38 to play. Yankees look like they're going to finish dead last, and it couldn't happen to a better franchise organization and more humble fans than Yankee fans. Did I say that out loud, or did I think that? Okay. Agree or disagree?
Oh, they're humble. Yeah, sure. No.
Oh, okay.
Not at all.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yankees lost 8 in a row.
Yeah, I don't know a lot of Yankees fans, but I don't feel sorry for any of them.
I don't at all. KU men's basketball will travel to University of Illinois and partner with the Fighting Illini in a charity exhibition game October 29th at State Farm Center, with proceeds from the game being donated to the Hawaii Community Foundation Maui Strong Fund, providing financial resources to the relief efforts from the devastating Maui wildfires. The exhibition game will be at 5 p.m. will be televised by the Big Ten Network. Bill Self said, and I quote, "For decades, the Maui Invitational and the City of Lahaina have been very important to college basketball, and our thoughts and prayers go out to that entire community as they recover from such a tragic event." Brad Underwood and I discussed how our private scrimmage could become an exhibition game to raise money to benefit the so many affected by the recent catastrophic fires in Maui. We both felt this would be a great way for our programs to create awareness to help this cause. The upcoming season will be the sixth time my teams have participated in the Maui Invitational, Self said, and the people of Maui have always been great during our stay, and it's been a lifelong highlight, and we just want to do a small thing to help them in return. As part of the partnership, KU will be provided an allotment of tickets that's larger than the normal visiting team, since this is an exhibition game. Brad Underwood went on to say, "The Maui Invitation is an integral part of college basketball. We are thinking of everyone on island of Maui who have felt the impact of this tragedy. Bill and I immediately talked about how we could do something together collectively to help, and we decided to turn our close scrimmage into a charity exhibition in a way we can use our sport to make an impact." The spotlight of the game, of course, heightened by Bill Self's return to Champaign. should raise meaningful dollars that will go directly to help the community of Lahaina and Maui. Self, of course, coached Illinois before he came to Kansas and was very, very successful. Two Big Ten regular season titles, 78-24 record, made it the Elite Eight in 2001, and won a Big Ten tournament championship in 2003 before he came to the University of Kansas. So that's all very cool. I like how they did that. They did like a video call showing Underwood and Self connecting via video, Zoom or whatever, and then they talked about how they were going to do this. And I like the fact that they came together, worked together. I mean, you know, that's a former K-Stater with a current KU coach. I know he's an Illinois coach now, Brad Underwood. But it just goes to show that people can come together despite rivalries or crossing this line or that line to do good things. Kansas and Missouri did an exhibition to raise money before, and that went very, very well. And I'm sure this one will too. And that'll be on October the 29th. So well done by both universities to put this together.
Yeah, I mean, I always feel like if you have the opportunity to do it, then go ahead and do it and make somebody's life a little bit better based on what you're doing. And I think I always try to kind of live by that, but it's a great thing to do to help out people that need it.
Absolutely. Happy birthday. Hey, cupcakes were good. Very good. Had a couple of your cupcakes. Yeah. I didn't have any of the cakes.
I asked some more at home if you wanted to bring them in.
I'm not going to turn that down.
I was like, I didn't know, you know, with you know, we're trying to not eat as many sweets as we get older and stuff.
Yeah,
so
well,
maybe at 40, I was supposed to stop eating cupcakes.
Okay. So you're, see, he's his first day being 40, and he's already trying to figure out the new rules of how much sweets you should eat. You now are officially old when you think that way.
It won't change.
No. Tomorrow, Dusty will roll in here.
I ate a pizza yesterday. It's not going to change.
Tomorrow, Dusty's going to roll in with
I guess I was technically still 39 yesterday.
Dusty's going to roll in tomorrow with a whole bunch of Twinkies and a doctor, the 2 liter of Dr. Pepper. I remember those days. You'd roll in here. You had these Twinkies.
I had a brownie and a Dr. Pepper for breakfast a lot of years in a row.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
And then I was told to stop drinking as much caffeine.
Yes.
And I did for probably about 7 years, but you get older, it's too hard.
It is hard.
To give up all the caffeine. Like
it is. And, you know, you hear the whole Lolo, you only live once type of thing. But
yeah.
So, happy birthday to Dusty. He is now in my class. He is in my club. He is a 40 and over club, although technically not till 5:40 this evening.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.